Hi, I'm Austin Wintery, and I'm the composer of the game Erica, and this is The Annotator.
Welcome to The Annotator, where composers share their thoughts and stories about their original scores. This is episode 91, where composer Austin Wintery talks about his original score for the video game, Erica. This is Christopher Coleman, and you can find all episodes of this podcast at theannotator.net. Austin Wintery has built his career on exploring and curiosity. He began his obsession with composing back when he was 10 years old, when he discovered Jerry Goldsmith's scores to Patton and A Patch of Blue. He has since composed music for video games such as the multi-award-winning Journey from That Game Company, for Stoic Studios' The Banner Saga, Squid Studios' Abzu, and Ubisoft's Assassin's Creed Syndicate. Additionally, he has written over 50 original scores for film, including his first, the Sundance Festival winning Captain Abu Rayyad. And outside of games, Austin Wintery has also maintained a busy concert schedule with regular appearances throughout the world. Wintery's most recent original score is for the interactive murder mystery game Erica, developed by Flavorworks and released by Sony Entertainment. In the game, you become Erica, a brave young lady plagued with nightmares of your father's murder, and with traumatic events that have haunted you as a child, dragged back into the light of the present day via grisly new clues, it's up to you to unearth the shocking truth behind this devastating tragedy. Every choice you make influences how the game develops, with multiple endings awaiting you at the finale of the emotional branching narrative. In this episode, Austin Wintery takes us beneath the murder mystery of Erica to reveal some of the intricate details of creating an original score for this extremely interactive game. He shares how key themes are combined and contrasted throughout the game based on the player's choices and the resulting atmospheric and even narrative effects. Austin Wintery also unveils how he came to utilize Delphic maxims as lyrics within his score.
This is a game that I worked on for about 3 years, and the score ended up kind of nightmarishly technical, but I'm really excited about it, so let's just dive straight into talking about it. One quick word of preface. This is a video game, and it's extremely interactive. It's shot like a movie, so it's a live-action game, which is a genre that's largely non-existent. So I'm going to end up talking about it a lot like a film, but just remember, and when I can remember, I will point it out, that a lot of what you're hearing is actually going to be very different depending on what you as a player choose in the game. And finally, one quick word that, in general, the storyline of this is about a young girl named Erica who you are, quote, playing. But unlike a lot of games, it's not that you are her. It's more like collectively the two of you inhabit her consciousness. That sounds very pretentious or strange, potentially, but it's true. She's a standalone character, and yet you get to kind of sway her choices and her dialogue and where she goes and things like that. I don't want to say too much, and I want to keep this very spoiler-free because I really encourage people to check out the game. I had an absolute blast working on it. In any case, the basic details of the story is that it begins where a young, probably early 20s girl, young woman named Erica receives a package in the mail that contains a severed human hand, and the ensuing police investigation kind of sends her down a rabbit hole of mystery and intrigue, which starts to uncover foggy childhood memories and that sort of thing, and it goes into craziness from there. So I'm going to leave that kind of deliberately vague, and with that, we'll just dive into talking about the music. So to start, this is the main theme, which I, after the fact, titled Know Thyself. That phrase, it's actually kind of a cliche, obviously, but that expression comes from the Delphic maxims in Greek, As you can hear here, it features one of my favorite recurring collaborators, the cellist Tina Guo. The cello kind of represents the character of Erica as she exists today. And I'll get into that a little later. You can also hear, accompanying her beyond the piano and some basic electronics, are these thick, low chords. It's a mini orchestra of all double basses that I recorded in Nashville, distinct from the kind of broader orchestral strings that we also recorded, and you'll hear in a second. Now you have violin and saxophone together. Caroline Campbell is the violinist, and Ian Roller is the sax. And then here are the proper strings, recorded in Macedonia, the Fames Orchestra, the Macedonia Radio Symphonic Orchestra, conducted by my good friend Oleg Kontradenko, who I've worked with for many, many years, going all the way back to Journey, actually. My first time working with them, and one of their first times ever recording a score. And Caroline doubling with the orchestral violins. The violin, in contrast, from the cello, is representative of Erica's struggle with her past in every sense. She has a traumatic childhood memory of finding the murdered body of her father, but also the fact that there's this constant sort of blurriness as to what's real. So the violin tends to show up at moments where we're trying to lean into the slippery nature of her inability to kind of grasp that. And then, of course, for the main theme here, we get just this little bit of Tina in a very unresolved way. That is also kind of a recurring motif in the score. Nothing is ever fully resolved. So this, as a major change of pace, is the second track on the album called The Aria for Delphi, and it uses lyrics from the Delphic Maxims that I mentioned, like the main theme's title comes from. Here she's singing, I won't attempt to pronounce the Greek, but some words that I chose, some lines from the Maxim, the 8th line, know thyself, the 137th line, grieve for no one, the 3rd line, worship the gods, and the 147th line, in death, be without sorrow. The singer here is Laura Intravia, and this was done because they needed an actual source cue for playback on set. A variety of ways. There's moments where the characters are actually playing it on the piano, and I had to make those recordings myself for their hands to kind of double, and for the player's hands to double when interacting with the piano, and then also as a vinyl record that she hears, which her father had played for her growing up, and it interweaves with the story in ways that I will leave spoiler-free, but it's kind of an important story device. So I had done this initial arrangement of just simple piano and voice, and Laura Intravia, a dear friend and longtime collaborator, sang a scratch vocal, and then a guy at Sony, a phenomenal composer in his own right, Jim Fowler, who I think was on the show to talk about Blood and Truth, he did this wonderful kind of 50s doo-wop arrangement of it, which was I was planning on doing, and then he just did it, and it was every bit as good, if not better, than what I was planning on doing, and so we just kept it. So that shows up a lot, including Laura's vocals. We'll circle back to it. This track is called A Lost Home, and it's the first one that's actually representative of the interactivity. So the strings are playing that aria, and the violin is playing the main theme, and they're kind of clashing a little bit with each other. The reason for that is because they're designed to kind of rub in an almost infinite number of ways, since in the game, you're looking at a shot of this sort of mental hospital that she grew up in, and as she approaches, the player can sort of wipe the screen and reveal the memory of her entering as a little girl, and whenever they do that, the violin is triggered, no matter where you are with the orchestral violins. And it's a perfect example of how the interactivity of the gameplay really heavily changes the nature of the music. That's a very simple example. They're going to get more complicated as we go. So now we're hearing They're Going to Lie to You, the 11th track on the album. This is proper gameplay underscore now, and so this track is massively edited relative to what you'll hear in the game. Mostly because, obviously, in the game, the rhythm and the timing of everything is driven by you, the player. So a lot of the shifts in tone and mood, or where things suddenly get more dramatic or less dramatic, those are being caused by the player, and it's done through a lot of sleight of hand, subtle loops and triggers and layers being added or subtracted, that kind of thing. And of course, one easy technique is jump scares. Like that. You'll notice now the basses are a dominant part of the texture. It's perhaps a little bit obvious, but I use the basses throughout as kind of emblematic of the mystery of this place, the Delphi House, where most of the game takes place, in which this character of Erica also has a kind of shaky childhood memory and associations that she doesn't fully understand. It's all very kind of Da Vinci Code in a way. There's a lot of intrigue and almost espionage, conspiracy theories, that kind of thing. Delicious stuff for a composer. So a shift like you're hearing right here is a classic example of one that's caused directly by the player, but we just have to kind of form into a linear expression for an album to be as convincing as possible. Similarly, Tina on her cello, as you hear here, is an element that can arrive at a variety of times in the scene. This particular scene is where Erica, after having left home at the beginning of the game due to a kind of police investigation there, has returned in the hopes of finding more clues. And as you and she navigate through the space together, a lot of things can happen. The violin coming in here is a perfect example where there's a hole in the wall you can look through, and when you do, the violin comes in and the other elements sort of transparently disappear, and we end up in a moment like this of kind of hollow suspense. There's a little brief snippet of Tom Straley on guitar. Another jump scare. And then as the player continues to spy, these elements build the beat, the rhythmic elements, the kind of the ticking and the sub-bass sort of pulse. They're all independently controllable by the system, so as the player does things, it's kind of creating these remixes that are changing the cue and new melodies coming in and out. A very definitive shift happens when the player walks into a room and discovers a dead body, spoiler, causing this big, pretty dramatic crescendo and a series of nasty stabs on the double bass ensemble mixed with some contrabass clarinet, courtesy of another dear friend, musician Andrew Leonard, and some wailing saxophone. And then as she leaves, the cello comes in to see her off, a sort of obvious moment of emotional struggle. And I know I've already repeated this point probably 20 times, but the way you're hearing it all here is potentially very, very different from how it will play back in game. There are so many variables constantly at work that I had to contend with that the album became this kind of guessing game of, well, what seems to make the most sense as a standalone piece of music, because there is no way to kind of canonize the official choice. It was very important to the team that there be no such thing as that, that the game be truly a product of the player's agency. So now we're on to track 14 called Another World Beneath. This is a good way through the game, and so a lot of the kind of mysterious hints and things are becoming more like revelations, and the player is learning a lot more about what's going on. But there's a fundamental indeterminacy to it all, because there's this ongoing question: is it all real, or is it all in Erica's head? And you'll hear I start to reflect that in the production itself. Generally, things just start to get a lot more weird, a lot more surreal. The violin, again, as a reminder, is kind of tied to her struggle with her past trauma. So we hear it a lot as she explores the kind of nether regions of this hospital. So the collision of the violin and the cello here is kind of a direct statement of that kind of thing. Thank you. It's not overtly weird, but a lot of the very naturalistic treatment of the instruments that you hear earlier is getting kind of twisted around, and even the orchestra itself starts getting put through these odd delays and filters to just kind of make the ground below her feel more and more unstable. Nothing that her eyes see can be fully trusted. And we want you as the player to feel pulled into that. Like, am I looking at things that really legitimately happened or are happening? Who's to say? Here's one of those deceptively difficult cues that I am often prone to writing, where it seems like it ought to be easy, and then the musician sort of looks at me with hatred. Caroline Campbell working her way through this very, very light and spiccato violin work. That's kind of the closest thing this score ever gets to an action cue. And especially in this moment, you can also hear, I always wanted to try to make it feel like it was walking this line and never fully suspense and never fully horror. It's a thriller that's dabbing its toes in all of those spaces. That was another big mandate from Jack Attridge, our director. As a side note, kind of random trivia, this high strings right here were by far the hardest moment in the score to record. The violins 1 and 2 in this kind of series of contrapuntal lines, it's not that difficult, it's just that they're up so high it's difficult to keep in tune. It's not really significant, but I felt like sharing because I remember it being quite a lot of time to get through that, despite them being a very good orchestra. Here's another sort of just fun thing. I really love how the bass ensemble becomes this kind of giant guitar. It's such a thick sound, you don't really need much more. Just a few little percussive ticks, and of course Carolyn back on the violin. This is one of those moments where there's a lot of layers that are building, and I created an unfolding of those layers for purposes of the album in the editing process that's potentially very, very different from the players, because so much of it's based on the timing of your decisions as Erica tries to escape these labyrinths of underground tunnels. This last cue is track 15, called Respect the Oracle, which is another line of text from the Delphic Maxims. We're now pretty thoroughly into the game, although I am ending it here because I don't want to get too spoilery. It's a very revelation-driven story experience, and so I want to keep it as clean as possible for anyone interested in checking it out. You can hear there these echoes of Laura's original scratch vocals from the song, the Aria for Delphi. I end up using them a lot in the score all throughout. It was one of those funny things that was supposed to be just this little scratch and then I'd replace it later. And then I loved it and the team loved it for the aria. And then I realized it's actually a great way to express this motif of what the aria represents, which, without putting too fine a point on it, is kind of connected to the mystery of everything. And so I hint it throughout the score, where I'll literally sample her voice, or the orchestra will play it in various ways, like right here, where it's really quite twisted. Some saxophone slithering around in there. The saxophone is kind of always making those little cameos, a little subtle textural device. And here you can hear another voice, very quietly kind of chanting in the background. That's Oyonga Bold, an amazing singer whose work I became familiar with through Eduardo Brennison, a composer on League of Legends, who's used her quite a lot, and I was just kind of entranced by her voice. And I was actually writing for her for another project and thought she could be perfect for this, and kind of snuck her in at the 11th hour as my final piece of the puzzle on Erica. So I take those Greek words like know thyself and grieve for no one and have her chant them at relevant moments. So here you can hear the aria in the orchestra and the low contrabass clarinet while she chants this kind of monotone straight through it. There's a lot of ritual hinted at and pointed at throughout the game, and I wanted the score to reflect it without being too obvious and going full sort of druidic chant or Gregorian or something like that, but have something that just felt ritual-esque. And for these final successions of moments, one of the things that's interesting is that everything that you're hearing now is actually optional. The player could easily skip all of this, which makes for a soundtrack editing challenge, because I don't want ever to make it sound like they are missing something. It's supposed to be based on their choice. But I'd be remiss not to highlight that this moment here is one of those that's optional, and yet, ironically, is probably my favorite moment of the whole game. I love writing things that feel emotionally conflicted, and so the kind of darkness and almost creepiness, yet warmth and hopefully beauty of Tina with the orchestra and the kind of creepy voices and all that, it all comes together in a way that if you choose something different, you'll never hear. So that's a little bit of a rundown on Erica. I hope it's interesting, and I hope you have a chance to check out the whole thing. Once again, I'm Austin Wintery, and it has been my pleasure to be a guest on The Annotator.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Annotator with composer Austin Wintery and his original score for the video game Erica. The soundtrack was released on August 20th, 2019 by Sony Interactive Entertainment Europe and can be purchased digitally on Amazon.com, iTunes, and streamed on Spotify and Apple Music. You can find out more and hear more music by Austin Wintery at his official site, AustinWintery.com, or you can follow him on Twitter at AWintery. The Annotator is produced by me, Christopher Coleman, and you can find more episodes at theannotator.net, or you can subscribe wherever you find quality podcasts. Wherever you do listen, we'd appreciate you leaving us a rating or a review, and if you know someone you think might enjoy The Annotator, please tell them about the show. You can also follow The Annotator on Twitter at Audio Annotator, or on Facebook or Instagram at The Annotator, or you can send us your feedback via email to theannotatorpodcast@gmail.com.